Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to another episode of Indiana Truth. Today, for the first time with us, is Colonel Daniel Davis from Daniel Davis Deep Dive. So I'm sure everybody is familiar with you. If you're not, go check him out. Welcome. Welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me, Stas. I appreciate it.
Yep. This time, I guess we're on the opposite sides of the of the microphone.
You know, guys, we talk on the show a lot about wars, power politics, wars of attrition. And as I've said many times, as much more brilliant minds than myself have said over the years, armies travel in their stomachs. But in this case, it's a lot more than food. You have to arm with modern weapon systems your soldiers. So armies travel not only on their stomachs, but also on logistics, supply chains, and even resources, the resources that are in the ground. Now, everybody talks about purified, processed, rare earth minerals that mostly come, the magnets that come out of China. But there's other minerals that are mundane. Minerals such as tungsten. Tungsten that is critical for everything. Almost every weapon system that Washington is producing right now, every jet, every tank, every ship, a lot of the submunitions and the main gun rounds, missiles, in some way, all of them contain tungsten. The U.S. hasn't mined tungsten since 2015, 10 years, preferring to buy from abroad. But something that these last conflicts and the Gulf War, what they've shown is that the American supply chain is actually very, very brittle. Washington is understanding this, and they're moving as fast as they can to solve this gaping hole. This is an issue that they're planning on closing. So America needs its own tungsten mine. I mean, 2015 is the last time they mined it. And tungsten has shown itself, especially in these last conflicts that Washington has gotten itself into, it's shown that it plays an oversized role, more critical than most elements, much larger role than most people understand. It's not just a metal, it's national resilience and survival.
The U.S. government is putting billions of dollars on the line. So the question is, can Volt Strategic Mining get the job done? Volt's operating model is straightforward. Acquire historic mines, use modern exploitation tech to maximize value. You know, the first rule of business, as they say, is location, location, location. So tungsten, which is priced near record highs, and Volt is right there in the place that it needs to be. They're not looking for new plays. They're not out exploring new areas that are high risk because maybe there is something there, maybe there isn't something there. They're located in mining-friendly states, such as Nevada, where is their flagship operation. And they're bringing back, revitalizing tungsten mines that were first put online back in World War II under the Defense Minerals Exploration Act. These are the mines that helped bring the minerals that defended a free world and beyond World War II. These are proven deposits, and they're going to be filling the needs of the U.S. government that are now in existence.
So Interstage Right, Volt Strategic Mining. It's trading under NOX in Canada. It's KNOX, that's its sign in Canada, and KNXFF, that's a sign in the U.S. They're in the midst of setting up the biggest tungsten strategic project, not just in the U.S., but possibly in all of North America. So what I'm saying here is that this is a de-risked opportunity. They're not looking for new plays. This is a proven area. And tungsten is key, and globally, its prices are skyrocketing. Governments, corporations, they've all realized how much they need it, not just for military, but also for civilian uses. And they're all scrambling right now to get their hands and lock in reliable sources. So areas like the Great Basin, so this is an area in Nevada. And it's getting some serious attention. This is, by the way, where the flagship operation Project of Volt is located in Nevada. This is North America's historic tungsten belt. The USGS estimated 168,000 tons of tungsten oxide could be located in this area. I mean, and then again, and this is a proven reserve. These are proven reserves that were exploited for quite a long time before one reason or another they were put down and people started importing. And considering today's high prices, that could be an equivalent at 168 tons. It could be equivalent to $30 to $50 billion in the ground, and probably higher because prices are going to continue rising. Demand is skyrocketing, and markets are catching on to all of these shortages. Don't get me wrong. There's smart people working there. They're figuring this out that, oh my God, we need to lock in these sources. The position could appreciate a lot more than it is right now. And a lot of value, and Volt sitting right in the middle of that value.
Now, this is where it all gets real interesting. In under 12 months, so less than a year, the U.S. government has taken five major steps to rebuild its mineral supply chains, which are in horrible condition. This includes the Executive Order 14231 for 14231, Project Volt. There are 55 foreign ministries focused directly on these critical minerals. All this is driven by the fact that the U.S. no longer mines tungsten commercially since 2015. This is why Washington has committed $12 billion for Project Volt and additional federal support, all to establish and secure domestic supply. Washington is in overdrive. Let's not kid ourselves, as they tend to be at when they realize how bad off they are. This has become a national priority. The Pentagon is now actively funding and developing domestic supply chains for the very tungsten that is in the ground at the Volt project. This is an active White House directive. Volt is working hard, systematically assembling what will shape up to be probably the biggest massive U.S. tungsten, and not just U.S., probably North American tungsten profile. Portfolio. If you want to learn more about this, check out my description. There's a link in the description that'll take you to Volt's page where you can learn more about the opportunities that Volt has. And again, a special thanks to Volt Strategic Mining for making today's video possible. And now back to the video.
Hello, dear friends. Just want to remind you, if you like this video or you like what you hear, click like, subscribe if you haven't subscribed yet. Send it to your friends. Let's grow this channel. Maybe we can finally hit it up to 100,000. That'd be a good round number for the summer. So let me know. Leave some comments and give a thumbs up. So look forward to seeing you in the next video. Cheers.
We are
and
looking forward to it.
The same. And what's everybody talking about these days? Except, of course, well, I think the world breathed a little lighter, as they say, when evil men pass. Well, some may not consider him evil, but Lindsey Graham. And by the way, and there's a question about where did he die? As a matter of fact, because some people are putting it together, and the timelines don't seem to fit for the amount of travel time it would take to get to Kiev and back to Washington.
The one thing I saw. That was the first thing I saw from Larry Johnson on sonar21.com. Mm-hmm. He put up one of those by looking at train schedules, at mm-hmm. flight schedules, the distance between when we know. I mean, there was meeting he had with Zelensky on the 11th, and then he went to that drone factory and had that picture of himself with a drone in front, and then later on apparently that same drone factory was hit, and then all yep. of a sudden right after he gets back to Washington DC, so the claim goes, is that he died. But then, as Larry showed, if there's like a 3-hour gap to where if everything worked perfectly, by the time the announcement was made, he would still have been 3 hours away. So mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe some weird thing happened somewhere we don't know about, but it's very suspicious. Because now they're saying it was some kind of cardiac arrest that happened. They're waiting on the final toxicology or something like that. That's the claim, anyway. The problem is, in our country today, we can't take anything at face value, no matter who says it. Anything that has to do with the mainstream media or the U.S. government, we have to take it with a grain of salt and say, well, maybe it happened that way. Let me see what other evidence has to say. Gone are the days when, oh, well, that's what they said, and they're not going to lie about something like this. There is no category where you can say that. They will lie about everything. I mean, I don't have to go into all the details, but yeah, on that surface there, I don't know what we just don't know what happened. All we know is that he's gone.
Now, I'm going to put you on the spot. If you had to say a eulogy for the man, because there are some people claiming he's a great American. Other people are saying he's an absolute traitor, with his Israel first, Ukraine war first, other things. What would you say about the man, if you had to give some closing remarks?
Well, I just kind of pulled out a biblical admonition. You live by the sword, you die by the sword. And if you want to live by laughing and telling people that you love this particular political party because they're killing all the right people, that you want to nuke the Gaza Strip, that money sent to Volodymyr Zelensky killing Russians is the best money that's ever spent. I mean, that's just three examples I pulled right off the top of my head. And when you continue to lie to the American public left and right about the efficacy of this help, that we need more money, that they give more to help to Ukraine, that just keeps the war going, that keeps on making sure more Ukrainian people die, more Ukrainian cities get rubbled. I don't have a lot of sympathy for something like that. I'm not going to, demean the departed, but all you can do is look at the life of the man and what he did when he was here, and it's—I mean, charitably, it's reprehensible. And so there's nothing good I have to say.
I don't know how much the money was worth, because you can't take it with you. If you're not doing good things with it, it just, I think, becomes more of an anchor around somebody's soul. But when he was partnered with McCain, he was the junior, I think, of that partnership, and then he took over. We know nature despises a vacuum, so somebody, I'm sure, is going to stand up in his place. Who do you think is going to be the next guy to take Graham's place as the cheerleader for war?
I don't, at least in the Senate, I don't know that anybody else is really prepared to pick up that baton. If there's money involved, there will be no shortage of people trying to get it. But I don't know, because of the history that Graham had in the years that he had to build up his reputation with the mainstream media. I mean, the mainstream media loved this guy, not just Fox News, but CBS News, ABC News, CNN. I mean, everybody loved him. He was great in front of the camera. He was very camera friendly for what is important to them anyway. And I just don't think there's anybody else that's going to pick that baton up. Michael McCaul from the House, I just showed a video of him earlier today on our show. He's all enthusiastic. Oh, you know what? We're going to keep the legacy of Lindsey Graham alive, and we're going to make sure we pass this bill in both the House and the Senate, very soon, et cetera. And a lot of other people with money, they're talking about doing the same. But nobody has the gravitas or the media presence that he had. So, other people were going to, but like McCall, I mean, he looked frumpy on camera. He's not really good in front, so he's not, the camera doesn't love him. They put him on sometimes just because he's in a position to be important, but he's not moving the dial on any beat. So I don't know that anybody else is going to be able to pick that up, and God willing, that baton will fall to the ground and die.
Oh, God willing. One of the things that Graham was pushing through and trying to push through with Trump was additional sanctions on banks working for countries that are buying Russian oil. I mean, obviously, China and India aren't going to give up, but there's about 2.5 million barrels that goes on a daily basis goes on the open market. Considering the everything that's happening in Iran and the shortages of oil as it is, you think this is going to keep pushing through? I mean, this is it's going to hit the American taxpayer.
Yeah, you know what? We'll wait and see. Because, I mean, Lindsey Graham, I remember, let's see if I can remember when that was, if I got my timing right. I want to say it was this past a year ago summer, where he went on, faced the Meet the Press, And he was just almost giddy with excitement about it. He has this huge sanctions package. He'd already talked to President Trump. President Trump was going to do it. It's going to be this huge thing, a game changer and all this kind of stuff. And Trump came out a couple of days later and goes, yeah, you know what about that? Let's don't. And then he went on and did something else.
Right.
And Graham was just, you could tell he was livid or whatever. Then all of a sudden it came in again. He's talking about building up sanctions. And then President Trump, you know, talks about going to, at the time, the Anchorage. And again, I thought Lindsey Graham was going to cry on national television because he was so upset that it looked like that some kind of a deal was going to be made, et cetera. Obviously, that fell apart, too, because President Trump couldn't bring anything to home. But Graham never gave up, and so he was relentless to that. He was a golfing buddy of President Trump. He was on the phone with him all the time. Nobody else has that I can see that President Trump already trusts. So I don't know that anybody else can bring this through. And what's his face? The other senator that was going to do this, Blumenthal, has no personality, no energy at all. So he was always the Democratic other side for Graham to try to claim bipartisanship. He may try to go through, but he doesn't have any kind of pull with President Trump. And I don't think he has much in the Senate as well. So, I just don't see much of a chance for that to go through, because if it does, that's going to cause too much problem. If Lindsey Graham himself couldn't ram the thing through there, I don't know why anyone else is going to be able to, because the same problems for Trump are going to exist. Now, the only thing we don't know that I'll say is that when he made this claim, Lindsey Graham had no problem lying. So it could have been a complete fabrication on the 11th when he made those last comments that he did in front of the cameras there at Kiev. But he seemed to imply that, you know, no, I talked to President Trump and this time it's going to go through and it's going to give him whatever. But look, even if he passes this stuff, so it's a tool. It's in President Trump's hand. What are you going to do with it? Because how is that going to influence anything that's going on the ground or with Vladimir Putin? Is a 23rd round of sanctions going to succeed where the first 22 didn't? I mean, it's embarrassing to me to make that case that, no, this time it's going to be different. And none of the other ones were, and this one wouldn't either. So I think it's going to be just a lot of media noise.
Yeah, there's a Russian saying, paket paketov. Where you've got the grocery bags, and the housewives, they take a grocery bag and they put all the other grocery bags in the one grocery bag. So you get the package of packages. So now this is how all of these sanction packages are being referred to in Russia. Like, yeah, we just took the new sanction package and put it in the package of packages and forgot about it. But you're right. A 23rd sanction bill, because this time, you know, well, actually, they're on the 21st or 22nd. I don't even remember anymore.
I can't remember. 21, 22. And then this one may even have been separate from those, because those are 20. I think it was 21 from the EU sanctions.
Right.
This was going to be in addition to it. I don't even know how many the U.S. has in addition to whatever that one was, but none of them have mattered, and all of them cumulatively. Yep. All it's done is make Russia sanction proof by forcing them to not rely on any of the things that we could use to influence them. So we've made ourselves impotent in that regard.
Yeah, it's just amazing that it's the only tool they have. It doesn't work, and they continue using it. Speaking, by the way, of non-working tools, have you watched any of the videos with Professor Postol? I had him on once, but we discussed climate, the fake climate emergency, on his work on the Patriot.
Oh yeah, we've had him. We've had him four times on our show on that very topic, again, just a few weeks ago. So yeah, very, very, very recent. Yeah.
Yeah. That's, that's really eye-opening. I mean, outside. Okay. So Patriot works with, aircraft, but with ballistic missiles. I think he was saying a 1 or 2% hit rate.
Yeah. He said charitably it could be 3 to 4%, but that's about all. And, you know, and he provides the video evidence of it. You can see all these missiles coming in. You see a few times Patriots go up, and only a few of them actually have a warhead event. And he showed how even sometimes when you see the warhead go off, that doesn't mean they got the missile, because he can show that sometimes it means they got the back end of the rocket motor, which at that terminal phase is irrelevant. The missile's still going to go, the warhead is still going to go to wherever it was directed to get to. So hardly any of them actually impacted on the warhead, because you have to hit a bullet with a bullet, basically.
Right.
And yeah, so even though this, you know, Zelensky is talking about about, well, let's build this new PAC-3 factory in Ukraine, which is absurd at face value. We could talk about that if you want to.
Yeah,
but that's
yeah,
years
course.
Away, even if it does. But even if you just said, okay, forget about 3 years, it's magic and it's today, it's just not going to make any difference any more than all those did that we saw with video evidence, the ones that in previous rounds where there was a lot of air defense going up in Kiev, or any of the stuff in Israel where we saw it, or any of our bases where it didn't work there. Everywhere you look, our bases, Israeli bases, it hasn't made any difference. The missiles get through, and that's Iranian side. Iranians have pretty good missiles, but nothing compared to what the Russians do with all the multiple classes, much less the amount. So it's not going to make any difference, and we've seen that through 4.5 years.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, there were videos out, some of the new Iskandars, they have flares on them to take out, confuse the air-to-air missiles that may be fired off from the F-16s, anything like that. It's an amazing thing to watch a missile fly overhead. This is video, and shooting flares off as it's going. The technology is advancing with incredible speed. The fact that they were taking 2 years to build a Patriot missile, to put one together, 2 years?
Yeah, I'm not sure about the timing on that. I hadn't seen that. All I'd seen was it was going to take 3 to 5 years to build a factory so that the first missile could come off the range. But on a normal case, I mean, they're producing 650 some odd a year, so I don't know that it takes that long for a single missile. But to get a factory from scratch built up, and I mean, I would almost ask you, I mean, is Russia so incompetent that they can't see a missile factory being built somewhere and never take the thing out? I mean, unless they're going to do like the Iranian side and first going to make like a cavern under a mountain someplace and then build a factory under there, then there's something to, but then you're talking about, 7 or 8 years instead of just 3 to 5. So not a lot of hope for that.
Well, there are mountains in western Ukraine, southwestern Ukraine, but those areas tend to be populated mostly with Hungarians and Slovaks, and they're not too thrilled with the Ukrainian government themselves. But there are some mountains, the edges of Carpathians. So I don't know, maybe. But you're right.
I mean, it would make sense. If you're going to make anything military, you better have it under a mountain these days. That's a fact. But, Ukraine doesn't have 3 to 5 years to 7 years to wait. And again, on this class, it's even going to be irrelevant because even if you get it, it ain't going to intercept the missiles. So what's the point?
And you know,
unless the point is making money, in which case Volodymyr Zelensky is good at that. So it could be utility for him because we've shown even on our show a bunch of the smiling executives from a lot of these missile defense contractors. They're more than happy to. They got no problem with it at all. They could care less if it actually intercepts. As long as you get the bill of sale, they're fine with it.
And you know, when I was a cadet, one of my buddies who was in the Gulf War, the first one, Desert Storm, and he was a sapper, and his engineering unit was parked right beside Patriot Battery, and they were shooting at Scuds or R-11s, which are about as primitive of a ballistic missile as you can get. I mean, they fall when they fall on target when they run out of fuel. You know, you fuel it up to about, if it's a nuclear warhead, it doesn't really matter. But if you're looking, you want to hit a particular target with a high explosive, you've got no chance. It's got one gyroscope guiding it and runs out of fuel. It falls. It explodes. And it goes at a very steady speed. It does. There's no maneuverability. The ideal target. And he was saying he was watching up to 5-6 Patriots go flying off to try to intercept it from the battery that they were sitting beside. It's just 1, 2, 3. And it's still going 4 or 5. And maybe about the 6th one, somebody was saying that they were hitting them. But from what Professor Postel was saying, that they weren't really even hitting them.
If they hit the rocket motor on the backside, even if they get something, that did not intercept because the warhead still went forward anyway. That's what he was arguing. He saw no physical evidence of an actual warhead intercept in the entire war. So take that for what it's worth.
That's scary. The U.S. has got what? It's got THAADs, which are about $12 million a pop. It's got PAC-3s. It's got SA-3s or SA-4s and SA-6s.
Yeah, SM-3s and SM-6s, I think, are the primary other air missiles, if I'm not mistaken.
Is there any arithmetic on how well they work? Because I think
I
those are
have not
mostly
actually seen
naval.
those, but I can't imagine other than drones. And of course, all of those are going to be effective at drones because they're relatively slow. Even the PAC-3s work on drones, but it's just a whatever 3 4 million pop for a $30,000 airframe. So
Oh,
you can
yeah.
do it, but it's not that good. I think the same with the SM-3s, SM-6s. I think are the same category. Whatever they cost, they can hit the drone, no question. But I'm not sure how cost effective that is.
Do you think there's going to be any kind of congressional hearings? I mean, if the evidence is like is at that point, and all your bets are on making just more Patriot missiles that aren't doing anything, particularly with issues on rare earth magnets, you'd think somebody in Congress may get involved to try
No,
to.
unfortunately, zero chance because there's nobody in Congress that just cares about doing the right thing, that cares about protecting America and protects, cares about integrity. They care about the money. And I used to not say that out loud. I used to say, well, there's some that do, and we have to be careful. I don't see any exceptions anymore. All I see are people, even those who actually do care, are cowed into silence by those that want it to continue the path to continue on to where they just get the contracts and just you better be quiet. Even those few congressmen that actually do care are cowed into silence. So that effectively means that they're meaningless and they no longer have any value to the country, to their district or to the nation. And so that means that the people who do have the power and do have the control over the congressmen are going to continue to run and they don't care if the thing works or not. They just don't care. They just care about the money. And then the fiction and a lot of them, they just won't go through the cognitive pathway of seeing, wait a minute, we're going to spend however many billions of dollars on this contract, and it's actually not going to protect us from incoming missiles. And they look over at Raytheon and Raytheon go, no, we're intercepted, man. We have a whatever, fill in the blank. You could pick your number, 30% interception rate, 60% interception, 90% interception rate, according to the Israelis. So yeah, no, they're lying. Okay, cool. And then they'll just sign it. They're not going to ask any more hard questions. They won't see the one thing about Ted Poston when he's been on our show with all of the science behind all this stuff. He says, anybody who works for me, ask for my work, ask for my, the math, the numbers here, the logic behind this, and I'll show you how. And then he also taunted them, and he said, when they make these, the Raytheons and all these folks, when they make these claims, he said, don't just take the claim at, because somebody said it or a PowerPoint slide. Look at the science behind it. Show me where the data is. Show me where a missile went up and a missile was intercepted at that rate. Not a test, but an actual combat. And he said, today, no one's taking him up on either one of those because they don't want to know the truth. And as long as we never get into a war, says that'll be fine. We just keep making money. And who cares about the Ukrainians, right? I mean, the Ukrainians, we care about them. No, we don't. We don't care about the people at all. We could care
Oh,
less
yeah.
how many die in the war, how many cities are destroyed. We don't care. As long as the war keeps going on and Russia gets harmed and some Russian soldiers are killed in the process, it doesn't matter how many Ukrainians. We literally could care less about them. But we do care a lot about the bucks. And if we keep making a lot of
Yeah.
money while hey, if Ukraine wants to fight, I've heard this. If they want to fight, who are we to say no? And if we can make some money off of it, why not? And so now then that just is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and the morality is gone. It's just no longer exists, and we're okay with the death and destruction because hey, it's nobody I know, so why not?
Yeah, and the sad part of that is most of the Ukrainians want some kind of peace deal, and the sooner the better. But the leadership's making money, kickbacks are going, so why stop at the gravy train just because some people get killed? The other day, and I'd seen this before, I saw a video of well, might as well call it a morgue or a butcher shop, actually is a better word. It was a clinic that was overrun by Russian forces before the bodies could be disposed of, and it was organ dealers, black market organ dealers from Ukraine. Well, working in Ukraine, and most people don't realize that organs are always harvested from a living body. You can't harvest organs from a dead body. Necrosis sets in almost instantly, so as the heart stops beating and oxygenated blood stops flowing. And I'll tell you, it was worse than most horror movies you can imagine. I mean, this isn't battlefield losses. This is, And it's not just soldiers, Ukrainian soldiers in case. It was civilians, children, just across the board.
I hadn't heard any of that. That's all news to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Ukraine taxes, they passed a law for export of organs, and they tax it. And they made several billion dollars last year in taxes off of organs being exported out of Ukraine. You think a country at war that we wanted to import organs to save people's lives, or soldiers' lives. But no, this is on export.
Well, that's awful. No, I hadn't heard any of that either.
Yeah, I got to track that video down. It was on a friend's phone. I was watching it. He hasn't sent it to me yet. I've seen other videos, but this one was probably the worst. I can send it to you if you want. Like I said, it's much worse, I think, than battlefield losses and seeing battlefield losses. That's something you used to. This is just a butcher shop that they were conducting. And yeah, the Ukrainian side, I mean, they're making money off of it.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to send me that one. That's what okay. I can do without seeing that one.
Yeah. Well, it's one of those things. Yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, you don't unsee what you've seen. That doesn't work that way, at least.
Yeah, I've got enough from the battlefields that I have seen to last me a lifetime. I don't want to see any extra ones.
Yeah, that's something that should be sent to Congress. Not that anybody would ever look. Everybody's paying for it. Do you think... Do you think something might change with Graham being gone, at least while before somebody tries to step into his place? Maybe some kind of a thawing, at least.
I don't think so. I because President Trump is still President Trump. So Lindsey Graham was the most effective, war hawker that was out there. But there's certainly plenty of others. I mean, Jack Keane's still there. Yeah, General Kellogg's still there. Mike Pompeo's still there. So Laura, what's her name? Not Laura Coates.
Loomer.
Victoria Coates. Victoria Coates. Is still out there. Several others. So there's no shortage of war hawkers that'll just keep at center. And also the fact that they lost one, even though he was one of the more effective ones because the camera loved him, there's too many others that are going to be out there. So I don't really think it'll be any difference at all.
That's sad. That's always sad. But what do you think of the let's see, it's been redesignated 2-19, I think, the moving Israel into the procurement system of the United States military, and then Cotton's follow-on bill, let's just sit him down in the middle of the and give him access to all of the intelligence data too while we're at it.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm way out on that. I find both of those reprehensible. I find the fact that, let's see, Thomas Massie, who's going to continue to serve all the way up until his last time, and he's not taking a day off. He is fighting tooth and nail against that kind of thing. Mike Johnson, the Speaker of the House, is fighting him tooth and nail with every loophole he can find to keep anybody from stopping that. And I find that in itself reprehensible, that not only was this bill come up, but then apparently it was, I think somebody from Quincy Institute found it, because otherwise no one would have even noticed it. And now then all these folks are doing everything they can to suppress it. And even when other congressmen are trying to say, hey, wait a minute, why do I want to link my country with them? And now Netanyahu was on Fox News, I think, over this weekend, bragging about what a great deal this is going to be and how much this is going to help America. Look, we're not going to take this $3 billion of annual supporting war. We don't need that. You know, we're going to stand on our own, except for, of course, you're going to have this investment, so we said, from this bill. I didn't see the number, but I would imagine it's a lot more than $3 billion. Oh, yeah. And then there's all this tied together militarily. And then, as you pointed out with Senator Cotton, also intelligence stuff. So basically, almost, it's maybe an overstatement to say making the two armed forces one, but it is sure going a long way in that direction. And it should be going the opposite direction. I am totally out on that. Any country on this planet, not UK, as much as I love a lot of my London friends, or Germans, or Japanese, other really tight allies, Australians, none of them. Not the Israelis either. I don't want that with any military. We need to have our own military. We make decisions based on the needs and interest of America first. And that's what every country is supposed to do.
Oh,
So
absolutely.
why are these guys trying to literally legislatively tie our country's militaries and intelligence services together? I mean, it's a real huge red flag, and it's our and a red siren going off to me. And I hope that something can happen to it. I mean, I'm grateful for Senator for Representative Massey to be working on this, but man, he needs some help.
Oh yeah, I absolutely. So theoretically, do you think the Israelis could, order themselves a Poseidon class submarine from internal system? Maybe some Trident nuclear missiles? I mean, is there any
I haven't
limit?
seen the I haven't seen enough of the legislative language to see what actually does that so-called tying them together. What does that actually physically manifest? And what is it when Netanyahu was talking over the weekend about this investment in this technology, whatever? I don't know what that means and how much of that, if something that we're doing, that means they get it or something. So I don't know. But whatever it is, it's bad.
Yeah, ask another question. Now, I haven't gotten an answer to it. I don't think anybody knows, but maybe you do. Is that a two-way street, or is that really just a one-way street where
They
U.S.
say it's a two-way
finances?
street. Yeah, they say specifically it is a two-way street. And you know, there's no doubt that over the years, a lot of our mutual stuff with Israel, we have gained some from it too, and we have benefited from it, and intelligence, some other stuff. Lately, some of that intelligence has probably been fake, but that's a separate issue. But over the years, there has been a two-way street. But I don't need that. We sure are self-sufficient because there's too much cost to having this connection going in here, and we don't need that. So, to those who say, yeah, but we would lose that connection to them, okay, fine. If there's something we want to buy later on, we can go buy it or something. I mean, they'll do arms sales to us if it goes back and forth. We can likewise sell them something if we want to, but we don't need the Israeli or the British or the Germans or the Japanese. As good as they are, we don't do that with them, and they're folks who are really good at that kind of thing. Why do we not want to do it with German manufacturing or Japanese technology, et cetera? People who are expert, world class experts at it. Why are we to not do it with those folks, but we are with Israel? No, we're not, because they want it ties together. Cut the ribbon.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct on that. And I think besides the neocons, there's a lot of pull to get the U.S. into wars it doesn't need to be in or shouldn't even be in. And that include, I think it creates a lot more tension with Russia too, between the U.S. and Russia, that doesn't need to be there. But you do remember who the number one star witness for weapons of mass destruction in Iraq was during the
I
congressional
was a
hearing?
few stars. Which one are you talking about?
No, I'm not talking about Colin Powell and his detergent. The number one civilian star witness for the congressional testimonies. It was Netanyahu.
Oh.
Yeah, he was between he was in a break of his political career. Yeah, you can look it up. He does a he, again. Saddam's about to get nuclear weapons. He's got mass weapons. Was same story. Just scratch out Iran, put in Iraq, gets the U.S. Into the Iraq War, or helps gets the U.S. into the Iraq War, and the rest is history on that. And this is before the 2003 invasion. So.
I was not tracking his there was so many in America that deserved just condemnation. I was focusing on them. I missed him.
He was all over that. And I started digging just out of curiosity. The earliest that I could find, there may be something else. The earliest story about Iran is 2 weeks away from a nuclear weapon was.
The best I could find, it was 1984.
That's it. Yep. Jerusalem Post, 1984.
Yeah, Benjamin Netanyahu.
That's what's 42 years of saying the same thing.
Insane. Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people have stitched together a lot of the videos of him at the UN Security Council. I mean, the UN General Assembly, whatever. And then you add those, and I'm like, Is there literally no point to where a rational thinking person can go, wait a minute, this dude's been just blowing smoke the whole time? I mean, because the whole time, 47 years and they've never done it, but they've been 2 weeks away from it. I mean, come on. But I guess the answer is no. There is no amount. They can just say whatever they want, and enough people will keep believing it, I guess.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I've got some friends, classmates from high school and university. They still believe it. They parrot whatever they hear. No, that's the people, switch on Fox or they switch on CNN as their background noise, and they're constantly being slightly mentally conditioned as they're doing something, and they start repeating that. It's an amazing thing to watch. You can't get through that. You start pointing those things out, and they just shut you down. That eyes glaze over. So.
Yeah, I've seen that a lot because people they get, I mean, they certainly would never acknowledge that they're conditioned
Right.
reflex, et cetera. But when that's the only thing that you hear and it is nonstop, consistent, the only message that you hear, then you're eventually going to believe it. And then when you have somebody like you or somebody like maybe Glenn Deason or our show or any of this judge, et cetera, when they go and say these kind of things, the reaction is, you must be wrong because my whole life I've heard this. So you're a danger because you're saying something that's not true. It can't be because I've heard it on Fox and CNN my whole life, et cetera. And they don't want to stop and think like what you and I just did that, hang on, since 1984, this guy's been saying this stuff and it never happened. And then even right on the eve of Operation Midnight Hammer, Tulsi Gabbard herself said, yeah, they still haven't done a nuclear weapons program. They still say there hasn't been a nuclear weapons program, and yet we still keep using successfully the same mentality. And people just don't get it. It's just very deeply disturbing to me. I understand part of the psychology, but I just don't understand how it continues to be when the evidence, even sometimes seeping into Fox News and CNN, it just never breaks through, and it's just really disheartening.
And the modern media, mass media, is really good at brainwashing. I mean, if we'll be honest about it, I was in Ukraine as a consultant on a project in April of 21. So, yeah, about 8 months before everything, well, or as we can scientifically say, shit hit the fan. And we were staying, this is in Poltava, which is a Russian region. Well, used to be a Russian region. Absolutely everybody speaks Russian, but mentally they've been reconditioned. And you don't realize how insidious it is until, so we're staying at this hotel. We're working at the ore enrichment plant, reorganizing there. I was reorganizing their contracting sections for their suppliers and their maintenance sections. And the hotel we're staying in, the first night I switch on the television set. That was the last night I switched on the television set. And you watch it, and it doesn't matter what channel you go to, it is just nonstop brainwashing. And you've got to look, go outside, take a look at what color the sky is. You watch that for a month and you'll hate your own motherland. By the time you get back, it's just nonstop brainwashing on all channels.
And I had a similar experience very recently. One of the ways I've decided to run my channel is that I like to put what everybody's saying and give viewers a chance to make their own decision. I say, if we're talking about the Russia-Ukraine war, here's what the Ukraine side's saying, here's what the European side's saying, here's what the Russian side's saying, here's what the American side. Yeah, here's what they say. Now here's the reality on the ground, make your choice, et cetera. So when I went to a recent trip into Europe, I was staying in the Netherlands, and all the people that I met with were just wonderful people, and a lot of the things. But then I'm trying to do my show, and so I'm doing the normal thing. And so one of the things I did was automatically I went to RIA Novosti, and I think it's called Military Review on the Russian side, to where I translated with Google Translate when I'm here in my studio. But when I was over there, I couldn't access it.
Oh,
And then I found
yeah.
out that I'm not allowed to. that no matter whether you're using, unless I don't know if VPN would have worked. I didn't have that, but just using their commercial stuff or the internet or high speed internet, whatever, they have blockers. So the only thing that anyone in the Netherlands can hear is what the government allows them to hear. And that, of course, is all pro-Ukraine. So even if they wanted to say, oh, well, Russia's wrong or something, they don't even know because all they have is the caricature of Russian. And apparently that's, I'm told by some friends that live in London, they say that that's the same thing in the UK, that the only story they're saturated with is this and virulent anti-Russian thing, and no one ever hears what they actually say. So there's no independent way for people. I mean, they don't even have the ability unless they have VPN or something. But I was like, wow, that's going to be a problem if you don't even listen to the other side other than the caricature. So the only thing left is whatever narrative the government chooses to convey. And what chance do they have then? The people I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. You're absolutely right. And you know something interesting, too? Telegram. So there's two versions of Telegram. People don't realize this. There's a Telegram you get from the Google store or the app stores. It's a censored version. It's the only way they could get it on there. And then there's the non-censored Telegram version that you can download from their website. You have to actually go to their website and download that version. And so I was... on my channel, my English language channel, I was reposting certain things off of RT. And one of my friends sent me a screenshot from the U.S. And on the Telegram channel, it says, this content cannot be viewed due to local laws. So it's being censored, actively censored.
Even on Telegram, I didn't know that.
Yeah. And I had friends in Germany show that to me. I had some friends in England check it out. It's like, yeah, they've got the same screen. So if you've got the version of Telegram that you've downloaded from an app store, that has active censoring in it, and you know when you say that about the Netherlands and such, you know the U.S. still has it's clinging on to barely clinging to life, but the First Amendment is still there. Well, the Second Amendment too is still there, clinging on to dear life, but the Europe doesn't have that.
That's what I thought too. As much as we're the mainstream media is blasting out this fiction, at least I'm still able to access these things here. So we do still have some freedom of ability, at least so far. We'll see how long that lasts, but that's where we are today. I'm sorry, I've got about 5 minutes left. Okay. I'm going to have to roll out here.
Yeah, no problem. I understand. And I'll tell you one thing just to add to that. I have a friend of mine in Germany who's a journalist. He just sent me an article from the German press. There's three people in Germany that have criminal cases against them. They're facing up to 5 years in prison for reposting an RT article.
Oh. And what was his article?
No idea. Just the fact that they reposted something from RT. It may not even been the same article, but any content, it's now up to 5 years in prison. I mean, these are the first cases to hit the docket. Wow. But it's so much
Western
freedom.
Democracy at its finest, man. Yeah, freedom of speech. That's what's a hallmark of. Oh, wait a minute. No, it's not.
Yeah. Freedom's not free. You got to pay for it for 5 years in prison.
Thanks.
So I want to thank you for coming on the show. It's always a pleasure talking with you, and hope we can repeat this, and maybe have some better news to work over the usual sludge that pours out.
Hey, well, you know, we can just talk about the truth about what we have, and people deserve to hear it. So I'm glad they have a shot to do that here. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Thank you, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Daniel, thank you for coming on, and I look forward to seeing you again.
See you very soon. Thanks, Seth.